Wednesday, June 7, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a strong start. Hope your week is going well. Hey, you are already halfway to another weekend. The weeks are just flying by right now, but happy Wednesday to you. I hope that you and your family and your friends are all staying strong and you are all staying healthy right now. And you know, we have so many things to get to today that we need to just jump in right away. And we need to jump into those NBA finals because the Miami Heat managed to tie the series up with my Denver Nuggets by stealing game two on Sunday night, 111 to 108 here in Denver. And I realize that this isn't the marquee matchup that the NBA was hoping for. Let's all be very, very clear. We all know they wanted Lakers versus Celtics in the NBA Finals. What they ended up getting was Nuggets versus Heat. And the Nuggets won game one pretty easily, 104-93, in a game that the Heat did not shoot the ball very well. And the Nuggets kind of cruised, even though I didn't actually think they played that well. But things changed dramatically in game two. The Heat decided they were going to play some zone against Nuggets big man Nikola Jokic. They allowed him to score more points. He finished with 41 points in the game, but he finished with just 4 assists on the night. And that to me is when he is the most dangerous. When he is distributing, when he is finding open players, cutting to the basket, open shooters around the perimeter. So have the Heat solved the series with that move? No, I don't think so. Because think about this in game two. Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope combined to go just 10 of 27 in game two. Now, if those shots fall, just a few more of those shots fall, it's a very different outcome. And we're talking about, was this going to be a sweep? Still, the Nuggets had a shot to win the game at the buzzer. But Jamal Murray's shot rimmed out and the Heat escape with a game two victory and they even up the series. Now, after the game, a lot of the NBA media was saying that the Nuggets should have burned a timeout. They should have drew up a play. Why didn't head coach Mike Malone use that final timeout? He could have got a better look than what Jamal Murray got with that kind of step back three that he took at the buzzer. I mean, personally, I thought the last shot was a pretty good look. I'm not sure Mike Malone is the guy that's going to draw up anything better than what they got. So I was okay with that. But what I was worried about was the Heat saying, okay, we're up three, just foul them. They can shoot 2 free throws and we'll still win. As long as we get a rebound, we're going to be fine. So I had no problem with no timeout taken at the end of the game. I had a way bigger problem with the Nuggets' poor defensive effort in game two. The Nuggets allowed 111 points and the Heat shot 20 free throws in that game. That's way too many. If the Nuggets are going to win the NBA Finals, they have to get better on their defensive rotations. And so many times, I hate to say, but that's effort. That's not pouting. That's working really, really hard. Remember this, when you're facing good teams, you can help on a dribble penetration. That's not the hard part, though. Stepping over to help, getting feet in the paint or whatever it might be to stop that dribble penetration, that's pretty easy. The hard part is when that dribbler kicks the ball and now I've got to sprint and fly at that shooter. And right now, the Nuggets aren't doing that very well. Helping isn't that hard. Recovering is hard, especially if it's 1 or 2 or 3 quick rotations. That's when a lot of times you see a defense start to fall apart. And that's what we saw from the Nuggets in game two. Not only do we need to see them help and recover, we need to see them do it without fouling. And that is something the Nuggets definitely struggled with in game two. Oh, and if a couple of guys would maybe step up and knock down a couple shots, yeah, that would be just fine as well. Game three is tonight in Miami. And I will say this, I am still feeling positive about the Nuggets winning this series. And I'll tell you why. I do think the Nuggets are the more talented team, but talent doesn't always win. hustle, hard work, execution, intelligence, those can outweigh talent. And in game two, we saw that. But I'll give you another reason that I think the Nuggets can still win this. ESPN so-called expert Kendrick Perkins, he picked the Miami Heat to win this series. And that idiot never gets anything right. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you to make sure you're going by DailyDoseSports.com every single week and checking out the new things going up there every week. You know, I actually posted an article on Tuesday talking about what the Nuggets do need to do in order to get a little bit better in this series. Couple of finer points you might want to stop by there and check out. But, you know, we also have links to the podcast. We have links to the YouTube video. We have links to the Daily Dose gear. If you're on the market for a new t-shirt, maybe you need a new sweatshirt, a new hoodie, stop by DailyDoseSports.com and you will find exactly what it is that you need right there. Today on the show, we actually have a little more sports news to talk about. But then we are going to be shifting our attention to the NFL. With the offseason now winding down, training camps are coming quickly. Which NFL teams have improved the most? Which teams may have taken a step back? We're going to be looking at both. Plus, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to be taking a look at a little NBA history today while also kind of looking at the present. So we have a lot to get to today on the Dose. And first up, let's stay in the NBA, where we are seeing a few NBA teams hiring their next head coaches. Because after going 45-37 under head coach Monty Williams, the Phoenix Suns fired Williams, but have now hired former Lakers coach Frank Vogel. Now, you might remember Frank Vogel won that bubble title with the Lakers after his kind of strict ways and forcing them to actually commit to play some defense. And the Suns are hoping that maybe he could do the same with their team. But don't feel too bad for Monty Williams, because he has been given a 6-year, $78.5 million deal to take over for the Detroit Pistons, who announced that their head coach, Dwayne Casey, would be moving to the front office after, let's be honest, 5 dismal seasons as head coach. Now, the Pistons are young, really young, and they've been a bit snake bit. The Pistons are hoping that maybe Monty Williams can be the right move for them. But you know, it's always interesting to me to watch these pro sports teams make their coaching hires. Because they'll be like, okay, we had a very strict disciplinarian. So what we're going to do is we're going to go in the opposite direction and hire more of a player's coach, a little more friendly, a little nicer, not quite so strict. We're going to back that off a little bit. We think you might have been a little too strict. Or they say, well, we had a player's coach, and you know, he might have just been a little too lax. Players were a little too comfortable. So we're going to bring in a more structured guy, a little more of a hard guy, a little tougher coach. The bottom line is this. Whatever pro teams just had, they're going to go hire the exact opposite. That is literally the science that these pro franchises are operating under. It isn't that highly intelligent. They just say, okay, what did we just have? Okay, let's get the opposite. That'll fix everything. Again, this all comes back to the fact that front offices won't fire themselves. They're not going to give themselves the axe for making bad moves. Let's blame the coach and let's go hire the opposite of what we just had. It's nonsense. And I can't believe that pro sports franchises actually operate this way, but they do it all the time. One more story in the NBA. Memphis Grizzlies guard Ja Morant has not been charged with a crime for twice displaying a gun on social media, but that doesn't mean the NBA isn't going to hand down some more discipline. That comes from Commissioner Adam Silver late last week. Silver says he is preparing to announce whatever penalty is coming for Morant's way for that second gun incident, and he will hand that decision down after the NBA Finals. Remember, Silver suspended Ja for 8 games back in March after the star guard held a gun in a suburban Denver nightclub while streaming himself live on Instagram. Then, in another live stream in May, this time in the front seat of a car with one of his friends, we saw Ja Morant displaying a weapon again. So Silver said last Thursday that the league and the NBA Players Association have agreed that the latest Morant penalty is coming, but that it should not be announced until after the NBA Finals are complete. Now, Morant has been suspended currently by the Grizzlies indefinitely. And with the team off until, you know, next year's camp, there's no urgency for the NBA to announce a decision. So basically what we have here is the NBA telling Ja Morant, you just wait till your daddy gets home. That's the kind of situation that we have. Except that his daddy is basically Adam Silver. And Silver is one of those parents that he probably just put his kid in a timeout. You go sit in the timeout and you think about what you've done. Now, if this is David Stern, Ja would be getting smacked upside the head. He'd probably be suspended indefinitely for like 3 years. With Adam Silver, I expect like, what, maybe a 25-game suspension? And now that sounds like a lot. 25 games, that's a lot. Except remember that under the new CBA, players can still make the All-NBA team if they play at least 65 games. So you already get 17 games off. Adding another 8? Big deal. Who cares? I will be very surprised if it's any stricter than that. But that is absolutely what I expect the NBA to hand down, because Adam Silver, you know, we talked about players coach versus strict coach. Adam Silver is a players commissioner. And by players commissioner, I mean, he lets the players do whatever they want. He just wants to be their buddy as much as he possibly can. Switching over to a little bit of news this week in golf, and we got some big news yesterday. The PGA Tour has spent the better half of a year doing pretty much everything they could to distance themselves from LIV, or Live Golf, the rival circuit that had signed away some of the best players that happens to be funded by the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Firm. That is the PIF, as they are known. Lawsuits were filed, players were banned from the tour, and sports washing and blood money were phrases that they were saying, talking about, this is blood money, how dare you go into business with the Saudis? What in the world are you doing? And there was this perceived notion that the PGA Tour and LIV Golf would never come close to working with one another. Most assumed that these two groups would remain on opposite sides of the ring and that they would battle back and forth. There could even be some lawsuits, maybe some time in court. And some believed that the Saudis would eventually take their money elsewhere and this LIV situation would just go away. That's not going to happen, because yesterday, just 3 days shy of the 1 year anniversary of the inaugural LIV event, the PGA Tour has announced that it has agreed to merge with LIV Golf. Both LIV and the PGA Tour will benefit tremendously from this merger. And that kind of sounds crazy, but let's be honest. This is a ton of money. And we know the PGA Tour, they're not struggling financially. But they do have a max they can kind of make, right? Well, this PIF situation and this LIV Golf situation, the money is endless. You're talking about Saudi money. They have a ton of it. And apparently, the PGA couldn't refuse it. My favorite part of this, though, is that the PGA has looked down their noses at these LIV guys this whole time. And what, now you are best buddies? Now you're in bed with them? It's pretty disgusting. I mean, Saudi Arabia basically said, hey, PGA golfers, we have a bunch of money to offer you. We have this new league. And the PGA Tour said, well, you guys are kind of ruining this game. I mean, you have a reputation for like human rights abuses. We're not going to take that dirty money. Okay, well, what if we gave you, the PGA Tour, the money? Oh, yeah, then we'd do that. Yeah, we're totally fine with that. No problem whatsoever. Got to tell you. When you start talking about what other people are doing and then you go turn around and do the same thing yourself, it's kind of disgusting, isn't it? I mean, it just seems so hypocritical. I mean, it's okay for me, but, you know, not for thee. You know what I'm talking about, LeBron. Let's finish up our sports news this week, and let's finish in the sport of boxing. And I know we don't talk a ton of boxing here, although we have. I enjoy boxing. I was raised on boxing. I was raised truly in a golden era of great fighters and great managers and great fights. You know, people talk about now, well, we have great fighters right now. Well, I can't tell because we don't really have that many great fights. We don't really have big marquee matchup fights. But I do know this. The fight game, judges, athletes, managers, referees, whoever, I don't know how to say this. They're not that bright, I guess would be the way I say it. I mean, you are talking about a sport where the goal is to cave your opponent's head in, right? So understandably, maybe they're not that smart. But I have another example of how the world of boxing, it's just the dumbest ever, anywhere. And it makes me so mad. You know, we talked a few weeks ago about a referee and a horrible decision. And we know so many times these boxers go in, they lay it on the line. They put literally their lives on the line in these fights. But again, let's be honest, a lot of these fighters aren't that bright. And I'm not talking about no-name guys. I'm not talking about the guys down at the local, you know, gym working out. I'm talking about big-name fighters. Here is the latest example. Because this guy is 29-0 in his professional career. But champion Gervonta Tank Davis, he is without a doubt one of the best pound-for-pound boxers on the planet. He's only 28 years old. He's coming off of maybe his most impressive win of his career when he got that seventh round knockout of Ryan Garcia back in April. Both fighters entered that fight undefeated. Davis left with a knockout and his record still intact. That should be a reason for celebration. We should all be talking about Gervonta Davis maybe being one of those up and coming great fighters that everybody's going to want to see. However, Gervonta Davis isn't that bright. Like I said, he is going to be spending the next 2 months in prison. Why? What in the world did he do? Well, here's the story. And I'm warning you ahead of time. It's going to hurt your brain. Davis, it seems, was sentenced to 90 days of house arrest back on May 5th, stemming from a hit and run back in 2020 that injured 4 people, including a pregnant woman. Okay, not good. Gonna get worse. He didn't have a license at the time of the crash, and he had a prior record of driving-related charges. The judge also noted at the time that Davis did apologize to the victims, but rather than serve the sentence at home, the judge allowed Gervonta Davis to serve the sentence at the home of his trainer, Calvin Ford, so that he could keep up his training for future fights. Okay, hey, the judge is working with you. This sounds like a pretty good situation. You would think that Tank would take this compromise and be thrilled with it and say, hey, what a great deal I got. Was a bad situation. I made some mistakes, but I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to get back on track. However, boxing creates stupid people. Here's another example. Because Davis opted to spend time living at a Four Seasons hotel instead. And then he went and bought a $3.4 million high-rise penthouse and moved into it. He did not ask the judge or inform the judge whether or not he could do this. So the judge then ordered him to immediately be taken into custody. Now, Davis's attorney, Michael Tomko, tried to take the blame. This is according to the Baltimore Banner. He said, blame me because Tank didn't do anything wrong. He did what I asked him to do. I don't think Mr. Davis did anything wrong except for listen to his lawyer, me. However, Judge Althea Handy was not having any of this. Handy revoked the house arrest and ordered him to immediately begin serving the remaining balance of his sentence in prison. Kids, this was avoidable. Davis or his lawyer, whoever, could have easily just told the judge prior to the move, hey, he's going to move here. He's going to be doing some training. He's got his own place. Instead, they were just above the law. Hey, he can do whatever he wants. And now, Tank Davis is in jail for violating his parole. Yes. But more importantly, just for being stupid. Again, boxing. I don't even know what to do with you anymore. Again, I know it is a sport in which you're trying not to get head injuries, but my goodness, we need to do some testing or something because the people involved in the sport are just painfully, painfully stupid. Okay, coming back. The NFL offseason is already winding down. Do you realize that mini camps are already underway right now? Well, who have been the biggest winners and the biggest losers from this NFL offseason? We're going to be talking quite a bit of NFL when we get back. So the NFL offseason moves are now almost finished. We'll have a few more things coming. But as insane as this may sound, NFL training camps, they're just over a month away from opening. How crazy is that? From there, we jump into the preseason, and then another NFL season is already going to be upon us. So by now, we already have head coaches that have been hired, they've been fired. Free agents have been released and they've been signed, and the NFL draft is now complete. So from the end of last season to the start of those training camps, which teams have been the biggest winners? Who maybe has been the biggest loser? We have seen some movement, and there are some teams that have really improved this offseason, as well as a few teams that have also taken a step back. Let's look at some of the biggest winners and losers from this NFL offseason. And I'm going to start off by giving a winner to a team that hasn't had much to cheer for since like Richard Nixon was in office. And that, of course, is the New York Jets. The Jets went 7-10 last year, but they started to show flashes that defense might be pretty good. New head coach Robert Saleh, he's got that team believing. They play hard. They're pretty physically tough. The Jets allowed just 18 points per game last year defensively, which actually ranks them in the top 10 of the league. Of course, the problem for the Jets was that they couldn't score any points themselves. They didn't have a quarterback. The quarterbacks they had were terrible. So this offseason, the Jets went out and made that monster deal to bring longtime Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers to the Big Apple. And suddenly, the New York Jets are a hot ticket. They got themselves 5 games in prime time. When was the last time any of us cared to watch the Jets in prime time? Hey, there are even some experts picking the Jets to be a playoff team, to be a Super Bowl contender. That, my friends, is very good news. Like I said, for a team that hasn't had a whole lot to cheer about. Here's the bad news. Rodgers might not be the guy that he used to be. Remember that last year in Green Bay, he went just 8-9. He posted his lowest quarterback rating since becoming the full-time starter. But I mean, who cares? Because you're never a team to talk about. The Jets are never an exciting team. And here we are talking about them. That has to make the Jets a winner. They have definitely been a winner this offseason. I'm going to give a loser, and I'm going to give it to that team from Las Vegas. Yes, I am talking about those Raiders. And you know, the Raiders are a loser for a number of different reasons. For one, they did lose their starting quarterback, Derek Carr, and they replaced him with injury-prone former Niners quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, Jimmy's already injured. Wait, it gets worse. It seems that Jimmy G underwent surgery on his left foot immediately after signing that 3-year contract worth $67.5 million in March. Now, there are rumors that Jimmy's foot might not be better this next year. He could have to sit out the entire season, they say. And that sounds crazy when you think about the fact that Jimmy G injured his foot during the Niners game against Miami back in December. He missed the rest of the season. So why did he wait so long to have this surgery? But also remember, In the five full seasons Jimmy G has been the starter in San Francisco, he's only played 15 or more games two times. 2019, 2021. In those other 3 years, he averaged just six games per year. And he's ended his season on injured reserve more often than he hasn't. Now, there has been talk that maybe the Raiders could cut Jimmy if he can't go. Okay, wonderful. Save the money. But remember, you still don't have a quarterback. Well, enter Tom Brady, kids. Because remember, Brady, of course, has retired. But he has, they say, bought an ownership stake in the Las Vegas Raiders franchise. Hey, maybe, just maybe, when it hits fall, Tom's going to say, you know what? Yes, I'm part owner, but I want to play again. I'm not done. Here's the problem with that. 24 other NFL owners would have to vote to allow him to play because remember, he has officially retired. You're not going to get 24 teams to sign off on that. Nobody wants that. Oh, and the news is going to get a little worse for the Raiders because the Oakland A's announced they are going to vote for Vegas too, which kind of takes away a little of that Raiders thunder of being the lone pro team in Sin City, right? Overall, yeah, not a great offseason for the Raiders. Plus, you do still have Josh McDaniels coaching you. So that's also, you know, not great. I'm going to give a winner, and I'm going to give it to Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. You know, there's a lot of talk that he wasn't going to get a long-term deal, but he did. He signed a five-year, $260 million deal. That's big money. And big money for a guy that a lot of people were saying, I don't know if they're really going to pony up and pay him. No, they paid him. They paid him pretty well. And then they went out and they tried to find Lamar some help. They signed wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. to a one-year deal worth $15 million. Now, is Odell worth that money? No, probably not. Another guy that can't seem to stay healthy, and he's not even going to be healthy to start. But it looks good. You signed your quarterback. You got him a weapon. Now, they need to upgrade their pass rush. And we also know that the city of Baltimore, it might not be the best place, you know, for a snowblower like Odell.
What kind of snowblower would you get us mixed up with?
But hey, they have a quarterback. That's the bottom line. And honestly, losing Lamar Jackson would have set that franchise back for years. So I'm going to make them a winner. I'm going to give a loser, and I'm going to give it to a franchise that won a Super Bowl just a couple years ago. But the Los Angeles Rams, oh, they are now fully in the middle of a massive rebuild, whether they want to admit it or whether they don't. This offseason, LA lost Jalen Ramsey, Leonard Floyd, Bobby Wagner. The Rams had to eat cap money to deal away wide receiver Allen Robinson. Wait, there's more. Aaron Donald is 32. Matthew Stafford is 35. Cooper Kupp is 29. Tyler Higbee is 30. Stafford is coming off of a spinal injury. And the only free agent that the Rams really went out and signed was backup quarterback Brett Rippon. Now, the Rams finally were able to draft a few players this year for a change. Because you'll remember over the past few years, they haven't even really drafted anybody because they traded away all those picks. And they might have even got some value on those draft picks. But they're going to have to completely restock this roster. The LA Rams have had a rough, rough offseason. I'm going to hand out a winner. Maybe. Okay, possibly. Sort of. Washington Commanders team owner Daniel Snyder has entered an agreement to sell that franchise. That's it. That's the move. That's your good news. Now, you can make a reasonable case that no team made a more significant move to help their chances of becoming a Super Bowl contender this offseason than the Commanders did by getting rid of that giant idiot. Snyder has now been the owner for Washington for 24 years. He is going to go down in history as one of the worst pro sports owners ever. Washington went from being one of the league's best teams year in, year out, most supportive fan bases year in, year out, to one of its worst. The pre-Snyder Commanders, they had more actual MVPs than the Snyder area Commanders had of players that even received an MVP vote. The pre-Snyder Commanders won more Super Bowls before Snyder than they did playoff games after he took over the team. And one of just two victories that they did have under him came back in 99, the year he took over the franchise. The one playoff game the Commanders won after Snyder started to reinvent that franchise, it came in 2005. And think about this. That was in which Washington quarterback Mark Brunell threw for 41 yards in a win. Daniel Snyder is a deplorable human being. He is still being accused of a few scandals. He is an all-time horrible owner. And while the team still has a ton of questions on the field, they've got to figure out some contracts. They've got to bring in more talent. Just ridding themselves of this moronic albatross, it's a reason to declare Washington a winner this offseason. Now, the bad news is that the deal hasn't been fully completed yet. This needs to happen ASAP because it's literally the only good news for the franchise. If they can get rid of Snyder, I'm giving them a winner. I think they can. I think they're going to, but it's not quite done yet. But just for that reason alone, I'm going to give Washington a winner. I'm going to give a loser. And when you hear this, you might think I'm wrong. And especially if you're a fan of this team, you might disagree, but I'm going to give a loser to the Green Bay Packers. Yes, they were finally able to get rid of that whiny quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, and they got a pretty good haul for him. So why would they be losers? Well, here's the downside. Life after Aaron Rodgers. Hey, the Packers went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. Two Hall of Fame quarterbacks back to back. So maybe Jordan Love is going to make 3 for 3. Or he's going to make the Packers wonder why they ever thought he could be a franchise quarterback to begin with. And that is very possible. Because so far in his 2 years during practices, there are a number of people watching Jordan Love and going, yeah, he's not that guy. It is really tough to be the guy after the guy. And if the Packers flounder, Aaron Rodgers is going to be laughing at them from New York. Remember, they haven't exactly been stocking the pantry with a ton of offensive talent around Aaron Rodgers. So what if there are growing pains? Sounds kind of weird, but the Packers could easily finish at the bottom of the NFC North. Even worse is if Rodgers goes to New York and the Jets do succeed under him, yeah, the Packers are going to have some serious egg on their face. That is going to sting. For that reason, I make the Packers a loser. I'm going to give a winner. You can go ahead and say it. I'm going to be a homer. I'm going to give a winner to my hometown Denver Broncos. And like I said, it might be a homer pick, but after watching this team respond to the firing of head coach Nathaniel Hackett last year, when they finished off the season by nearly beating the Kansas City Chiefs, and then by beating the Los Angeles Chargers, that does show us the Broncos do have the talent to at least compete in the AFC West. So the season ends, Hackett's gone, and they went out and they signed head coach Sean Payton. Now Payton has immediately set out to rebuild the offensive line. Yeah, what a novel concept there. Quarterback Russell Wilson has slimmed down. He looked a little heavy last year. And Payton has also gotten the locker room's attention by cutting longtime kicker Brandon McManus, whose production was down, but McManus was also a little bit of a prima donna in the locker room. He'd called out a couple of coaches, and Sean Payton said, nope, you ain't doing that anymore. Now, there is a chance that all this stuff backfires, and there's a chance that Russell Wilson could be washed. He could be done. Okay, but if so, Sean Payton has already paved the way to move on. Because the ownership has to be loyal to Sean Payton. They don't have to be loyal to Russell Wilson. They don't have any allegiance to Russell Wilson, I hate to say, but they didn't hire him. They did hire Sean Payton. So if this crashes and burns, hey, Sean Payton, go get the next guy. Denver Broncos could be very dangerous again, and it would be for the first time since Peyton Manning retired. And if that is the case, they are definitely a winner. Speaking of retiring, we move next to a loser. And where else could we go but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who lost quarterback Tom Brady to retirement. Okay, that sounds bad enough, right? No more Brady. The most decorated quarterback in NFL history is gone. But remember that the Buccaneers are going to be absorbing $35 million in dead cap money for Tom Brady. That is more than 25 other teams having dead money for their entire roster. They have to take that for one guy. That's a bunch of money. Okay, so the dead cap, Brady's gone. Well, what is your best option to replace Tom Brady? They don't have a whole lot. They have very young quarterback Kyle Trask, who has not been very impressive. And then they went out and they signed Baker Mayfield. Hey, they barely even had enough money to do that. Now, Tampa's defense should still be at least a little bit tough, but the offense is aging. The offensive line is going to have to come back from multiple injuries, and they've lost a few people too. And the quarterback is most likely going to be pretty awful. The NFL offseason has not been kind to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I definitely have them as a loser. Next up, you know, they kind of keep doing this, but I really like what the Philadelphia Eagles did this offseason, and they are a winner in my book. There was a really strong chance going into the offseason after the Super Bowl that free agency could have crushed the Eagles. The Eagles lost running back Miles Sanders, linebacker TJ Edwards, and both safeties, C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Marcus Epps. Plus, they lost defensive lineman Javon Hargrave. Well, the Eagles have got to be in decline. That is a ton of talent. But their front office did rally a little. They kept Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. And then they did hold on to both cornerbacks Darius Slay and James Bradbury. Okay, but the Eagles lost some key pieces. Not as many as we thought they might, but they did lose some. However, in the NFL draft, they went out and they grabbed Georgia Bulldogs defensive lineman Jalen Carter and Bulldogs linebacker Nolan Smith. Well, that's going to help alleviate those defensive losses quite a bit. They also picked up running back DeAndre Swift and Rashad Penny. Hey, Philadelphia was over the cap. They had a ton of free agents, and somehow they managed the offseason pretty well. And for that, I've got to give them a winner in this offseason, because it could have been way worse. Not only was it not, they kind of rallied and made some pretty solid moves. Okay, I'm going to give one more loser before we go to break, and that is to the New England Patriots. Hey, it's not all bad news. It isn't. The Patriots did finally go out, and they hired an offensive coordinator. And they got a very familiar face in Bill O'Brien, who, yes, seems to be a giant D-bag, but he does know how to deal with Bill Belichick. He has been good on the job when he's been offensive coordinator before. Sure, maybe that was Tom Brady, I don't know. But don't worry about that. Here is why I am making the Patriots a loser. Last season, the Patriots' offense ranked among the worst in pretty much every statistical category. Okay, so this year, they're going to go out, they're going to add some weapons. They're going to build up that offense, right? And they started strong. They swapped out disappointing free agent wide receivers Nelson Aguilar and Jonnu Smith, and they brought in Juju Smith-Schuster and tight end Mike Gesicki. Now, neither of those guys is what they used to be, but they are an upgrade, no doubt. But here's the problem for New England. Their offensive line allowed 41 quarterback sacks last year. And they only averaged 106 rushing yards per game. Okay, so that's not a very good offensive line. It needs to be upgraded. The Patriots didn't get any help whatsoever. What did they do in the draft? They went and drafted defense. They have defense. They needed offense. They specifically needed help on the offensive line. Hey, we all have questions about quarterback Mac Jones. But when you fail to protect him, you're just asking for more questions. You're just asking for more problems. And I truly believe the New England Patriots are going to struggle a little bit. And Mac Jones is going to get knocked around a little bit more. Because that offensive front, it is not up to par. And they didn't address it at all. Okay, coming back. We still have a few more winners and losers to look at from this NFL offseason. But then we need to get over to our Daily Dose top five. Hey, my Denver Nuggets have finally reached the NBA Finals. And in doing so, they actually made some history. We're going to discuss the teams that could join them. We'll talk about that when we get back. So let's continue with some of the biggest winners and losers from this NFL offseason. And I'm going to give a winner to a team that hasn't had a whole lot to cheer about lately. And honestly, they're probably not going to have a whole lot to cheer about still for a while. But eventually, they could. And when they do, we may look back at this time as the building block for their future. Because the Houston Texans finally landed both their quarterback and their head coach. Now, yeah, I always have to wait and see how is a young draft pick going to turn out? How is a young coach going to turn out? And we're going to have to wait and watch and see how Houston does. But at least Houston is done kind of waiting around who's going to be the guy. When do we get our guy? They went out and they got their guy. They got San Francisco 49ers defensive coordinator D'Amico Ryans and signed him to a 6-year deal. Good start. Then they used the number 2 pick in the NFL draft on Ohio State quarterback CJ Stroud. And now it kind of feels like Houston is out of that weird, bad holding pattern that they've been stuck in going back to when they fired Bill O'Brien and they traded away Deshaun Watson. They did also upgrade their offensive line. That should help. Going to take some time, but that should help. And they went out and they got real aggressive in the draft and they drafted Alabama defensive star Will Anderson Jr. Hey, these are all huge upgrades for a team that is desperately searching for an identity. Is it going to take a while? Yeah, probably. They're probably going to go through 2, 3, 4 years of it being pretty tough. But then at the end of that, they might actually start making a push. And if they can keep this going, they could actually turn this from a complete dumpster fire to a respectable franchise. It's been a long time coming. I'm going to give a loser, and I'm going to give it to a team that should probably just go out and embrace the fact that they truly need to massively rebuild. However, they're kind of in a weird situation. So let's look at the New Orleans Saints. Quarterback Drew Brees, of course, retired. Head coach Sean Payton is now in Denver. Well, the Saints have tried to kind of band-aid those departures. They've plugged in guys like Jameis Winston and Andy Dalton. It hasn't really worked. So instead of just saying, let's scrap it, let's go get a new guy, let's go kind of rebuild this, retool this franchise and get it back on track, they went out and they got another guy that they're hoping to be a band-aid. They did not go draft their future franchise quarterback. They did not start over. The Saints went out and spent pretty good money on former Las Vegas Raider quarterback Derek Carr. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like Russell Wilson money or Deshaun Watson money, but it is 2 years for $70 million for a guy that has made the postseason twice in his entire career. Now, is that all his fault? Of course not. And yet, he never seemed to help. He didn't carry his team ever. Here's the problem for New Orleans. The NFC South division is totally up for grabs. Tampa is a mess. The Falcons, I don't know, they're like trying to play wishbone offense or something. The Panthers are still really young. So there is actually some hope that New Orleans could be the team to beat in this division. But remember this. The New Orleans Saints are the oldest team in the league. Now, if you're old or veteran or pre-owned or whatever you want to call it, shouldn't you be, what's the word, better? Your running back, Alvin Kamara, there's a chance he might be suspended. There's a chance he could be going to jail. And they didn't do much to replace him. You don't have any cap space. Your defense took a big step backwards this offseason. I'm not a fan of what New Orleans did this offseason at all. And you know what's worse? They're probably going to contend for this division, and they're going to be right in the hunt, which isn't the good news you think it is. Because what it means is you stay in that awful mediocre zone. You're like 9-8, 8-9. You don't get too high. No, you don't get too low, but you never really improve your franchise, and you never really win anything either. That, to me, is a bad holding pattern to be in, and I think that's where the Saints are going to be. Our final winner this week in the NFL offseason is a team that I do still have some major concerns about, but they did address a pretty big problem, and that is the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins went 9-8 last year. They made it to the playoffs, and then they lost in the wild card round to their division rival, the Buffalo Bills. And they lost that game 34-31, mostly because their defense is awful. Well, the Miami Dolphins went out, and they're going to try to fix that. Enter grumpy old man defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, who has been hired to fix that mess of a defense. The Dolphins also went out and signed quarterback Jalen Ramsey, who isn't what he used to be, but he's still a better than average cornerback. Fangio, let's be honest, he was a terrible head coach here in Denver, but he is a very, very good defensive coordinator. The Dolphins also got linebacker David Long, should be an upgrade. Sure, the offensive line still isn't great. They didn't do a whole lot about that. And quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, he like poops his pants and forgets who he is when it thunders outside. But the defense should be improved. That's what I'm focusing on. The defense is going to be better. Can they trust the quarterback? Not sure. Is the offensive line going to get him killed? Possibly. When he gets hit, could anything, and I mean anything, happen on the field? Absolutely. But I'm going to call the Miami Dolphins a winner. So we finish off our winners and losers of this NFL offseason. And we're going to end up with a huge loser because this team was already a mess. And this offseason, oh, it's gone from bad to worse. The Arizona Cardinals have had an absolutely horrible offseason, and they are going to make a very hard push to be the worst team in the NFL this coming year. Coming off of a 4-13 season, their star quarterback, Kyler Murray, he tore his ACL in December. Now, they usually say it takes a full calendar year to get ready, so he could easily miss part of this next coming season. But I mean, years of cap mismanagement and terrible drafting, it has left the Cardinals with a mess of a roster. That's not all. The Cardinals lost Zach Allen. They lost J.J. Watt. They lost Rodney Hudson. They declined the option on linebacker Isaiah Simmons. And then they cut unhappy wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins. Kids, this roster is bad. Wait, it gets worse. So let's say the Cardinals finish with the worst record in the league, which is very possible. You have USC quarterback Caleb Williams, who should be the best player available, right? I mean, Caleb Williams looks like he's going to be the top quarterback in college football. He's probably going to win the Heisman. This is going to be the number one pick this next year. Do the Cardinals cut ties with Kyler Murray? Do they make that move and go draft Caleb Williams? They almost have to, right? Okay, so then you bring Caleb to what? You bring him into that disaster and you ruin him next? If so, I won't even make the Cardinals be the biggest loser of this offseason. Caleb Williams will be the biggest loser of this offseason by far. You don't want to go anywhere near that franchise. Now, there are some teams out there that do still have some money to spend. I want you to think about this. The Chicago Bears, the Carolina Panthers, the Dallas Cowboys, Indianapolis Colts, Detroit Lions, those Arizona Cardinals, New York Jets, and Houston Texans still have around $20 million in cap space right now. And there are some players out there who you could go get. Like I said, wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, he's still available. Jadeveon Clowney has not been signed yet. Marcus Peters, Frank Clark, Ndamukong Suh, Leonard Floyd, they are all still out there, but they're going to cost you some money because they are veteran players. And as we get closer to training camps, we're going to start seeing players go down with injuries. That's just what happens. And when that happens, we're going to see some of these players get picked up. And now you know the teams that have the money to sign them. They will probably be the ones that will be very, very active. This NFL offseason, I don't think it's been as maybe insane as some of the past few that we've had. A lot of quarterback movement. But this one has still been crazy. And there have been a number of teams that have really helped themselves. And then like we just talked about, there have also been a few teams that haven't helped themselves one single bit. Now, as we do so many weeks here at The Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. We have seen some history take place this year in the NBA. Whether or not the NBA and the officiating and the NBA media has liked it or not, the Denver Nuggets are in the NBA Finals for the first time in their franchise's history. Yes, they did go to the finals back in the ABA days, but never in the NBA. And honestly, those ABA Finals, they kind of don't really count. Because the ABA was actually collapsing at that time. And so the Nuggets kind of got in by default. It was a good team, don't get me wrong. But it has always kind of had an asterisk next to it. Well, no more. The Denver Nuggets earned their way this year to the 2023 NBA Finals by sweeping the Los Angeles Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. Now, we will see if the Nuggets can go on and win these finals. But just getting there broke one of the longest NBA Finals droughts in history. The Denver Nuggets had a 47-year NBA Finals drought going before they finally beat the Lakers this year in advance. But believe it or not, that's not the longest drought going. There are longer NBA Finals droughts. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the longest current NBA Finals droughts that are going. And I'm telling you right now, there are some big ones. We start off at number 5. And we go to a franchise that was an expansion franchise back in 1989. They've had some decent teams. And actually, back in 2004, they put together a pretty solid season. The Minnesota Timberwolves went 58-24. You might remember they had head coach Flip Saunders. He had Kevin Garnett, Latrell Sprewell, and Sam Cassell. And in the playoffs, they beat the Denver Nuggets in the first round. Okay. They advanced and they beat the Sacramento Kings in round number 2. But they eventually lost in the Western Conference Final to the Los Angeles Lakers in 6 games. That was the closest the Timberwolves have ever been to getting to the NBA Finals. They have never been to the NBA Finals in their 34-year history. That's quite a drought of never being to those finals, but it only ranks the Minnesota Timberwolves today on our list at number 5. We move on to number 4. And we reach a team that has actually been to the NBA Finals before. In fact, they even won the championship once. But that was a long, long time ago. It was so long ago that they didn't even have the same name. Because back in 1978, the Washington Bullets had Elvin Hayes, they had Wes Unseld, and they had Mitch Kupchak. They went 44-38, and then in the playoffs, they beat the Atlanta Hawks. Then they beat the San Antonio Spurs and the Philadelphia 76ers, and they went to the NBA Finals. The Bullets beat the Seattle Supersonics, who you might remember had Dennis Johnson and Gus Williams. And the Bullets were the NBA champions. The following season, in 1979, they had an even better record. They went back to the finals. But this time, Seattle won the rematch in just 5 games. Well, the Bullets have never been back. Now, they changed their name to the Washington Wizards after the 1997 season. but it didn't really help their city's crime or their basketball team. Since becoming the Wizards 25 years ago, the Washington franchise has only even made it to the postseason 9 times. But since going to those NBA finals that they lost back in 1979, it has been 44 years since the Washington Wizards have made it to the NBA finals, and that lands them today on our list at number 4. We arrive at number 3 on our list of longest NBA finals droughts, and we reach the team that has the longest drought of having never made it to the NBA finals. But honestly, what else would you expect from this franchise? They have been a laughingstock of the NBA for decades. But this is another team that has moved cities a couple of times, and it hasn't helped. Poor ownership, bad luck, bad draft picks. They have plagued this team from the beginning. The franchise was actually founded as the Buffalo Braves back in 1970. They were an expansion team, and they were led by Hall of Famer Bob McAdoo. The Braves reached the NBA playoffs 3 times during their 8 seasons in Buffalo. However, the franchise was having a conflict with the Canisius Golden Griffins, the college team, over Buffalo Memorial Auditorium. And the sale of the franchise led to them relocating from Buffalo to San Diego, California in 1978. They changed their names from the Buffalo Braves to the San Diego Clippers in reference to the sailing ships that you would see in San Diego Bay. Well, the team did nothing. They never even made the playoffs. In 1984, owner Donald Sterling controversially relocated the franchise to Los Angeles. By the way, he did it without NBA approval, which was somehow allowed. And over the course of their first 27 seasons in LA, the Clippers qualified for the postseason just 4 times, and they won a single playoff round. The LA Clippers are infamous for being a perennial loser. They have been better since the NBA forced Sterling to sell the team. And in 2021, they even made it to the Western Conference Finals, but then they lost to the Phoenix Suns. But in 53 years of their existence, the Clippers have never made it to the NBA Finals. And 53 years lands them on our list today at number 3. Next up, we get to number 2. And we have a team that has not been to the NBA Finals in, wait for it, 62 years. And to be honest, they might still be a few years away. The team's origins can be traced to the establishment of the Buffalo Bisons in 1946 in Buffalo, New York. They were actually a member of the National Basketball League. After 38 days in Buffalo, the team moved to Illinois. They were renamed the Tri-City Blackhawks. In 1949, they joined the NBA as part of the merger between the NBL and the BAA, the Basketball Association of America. And bizarrely, Red Auerbach was actually the coach for a little while. In 1951, they were moved to Milwaukee. They changed their name to the Milwaukee Hawks. Then they moved to St. Louis, where they actually won an NBA title in 1958. The St. Louis Hawks won with Bob Pettit and Cliff Hagan, and they actually qualified to be in the NBA Finals in 57, 60, and 61. The Hawks would play the Boston Celtics in all 4 of those trips. The St. Louis Hawks then moved to Atlanta in 1968. The franchise was sold. And I mean, the Atlanta Hawks have had some very good teams, some amazing players, from Pettit to Dominique Wilkins to Doc Rivers, Dikembe Mutombo, Mookie Blaylock, even Lanny Wilkins. But they've only even been to the Eastern Conference Finals once in the last 62 years. The Hawks now have a 62-year streak of not even making it to the NBA Finals. And that comes in today on our list at number 2. So we arrive at the team with the longest NBA Finals drought. And this one goes back a really, really long time. How long? Well, the last time this franchise made the NBA Finals, Harry Truman was in office. Oh, and the USA consisted of just 48 states. The franchise began as the Rochester Seagrams, a semi-professional team in Rochester, New York. They actually formed in 1923. They joined the National Basketball League in 1945 and renamed their team the Rochester Royals. They actually won the league's championship in 1946. They later jumped with three other teams to the Basketball Association of America, which of course would be absorbed into the NBA in 1948. Now, the Royals actually had some success on the court. They won the title in 51. However, this team, they just couldn't ever win much after that. They weren't turning a profit in Rochester, so they moved to Cincinnati. They became the Cincinnati Royals. Then they moved to Kansas City, Missouri, and they were actually called the Kansas City / Omaha Kings because they would split their home games between Kansas City and Omaha, Nebraska. Then the nickname was changed to avoid confusion with the Kansas City Royals. That's why they named them the Kings. And after three seasons, they became fully the Kansas City Kings, even though they still split their home games between the two cities. The franchise, again, failed to find any success in Kansas City. And after the 84-85 season, they moved the Kings to Sacramento. Between 2006 and 2022, the Sacramento Kings had 16 consecutive losing seasons. That is the most in NBA history. Now, the Kings actually made the conference finals back in 81. They had Otis Birdsong. They had Phil Ford. That was still in Kansas City. And then they went to the conference finals in 2002 with Chris Webber and Mike Bibby. You might remember the NBA literally fixed the series so the Kings couldn't win. That's it. Not only had the Kings never made it back to the finals, they really haven't been all that close. The Sacramento Kings drought of 72 years without being to the NBA Finals comes in on top of our list today of NBA Finals droughts at number one. And you know, we look at these teams on our list and we think they have no chance of breaking these droughts anytime soon. It kind of feels that way, doesn't it? But think of this season with the Denver Nuggets. I mean, when they drafted a fat kid from Serbia back in 2015, no one would have believed he would change anything. And look how much that has changed now. Hey, next week on The Daily Dose, I have something a little different and a little special for you. I'll tell you this right now, we are going to be very NBA heavy. We're actually going to be looking back at some NBA history. So be sure that you tune into The Daily Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
What kind of snowblower you get us mixed up with?